The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. It's time now for the Doctor's Lounge Show with Dr. Hal Schurz.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and each week I, or my co-host, Dr. Scott, comes to you and brings you the information that you need to have so that you can advocate for the health care for yourself and for your family. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is the sponsor of the Doctor's Lounge. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. We stand for the principles of the doctor-patient relationship and healthcare freedom for all Americans. On the Doctor's Lounge, we talk about the subjects that doctors are talking about all over the country and bring to you the information that you need to make better healthcare decisions and better decisions in general that will affect your healthcare. So, go to www.PCFoundation.org. That's D4PCFoundation.org, and contribute to our foundation. It's tax deductible, and it keeps this show going and allows us to do the work that we do in Washington and in state capitals. And in the recent meeting that I just got back from, which I'd like to give everybody a little bit of insight about and a little recap. Firstly, before I get started, our producer and the owner of America's Web Radio, David Moxley, has fallen ill and is recuperating. And I want everybody in our listening audience in the Doctor's Lounge community to just take a moment and say a prayer for healing for David. He has been a strong supporter of this show since I met him 11 years ago. And we all wish him well. And our prayers are with him for a speedy and complete recovery. So we miss you, David, and we look forward to having you back here in studio shortly. I want to also thank my friend Dr. Ori, who sat in for me 2 weeks ago. It's been a little bit of time since I've been here behind the microphone. As everybody who's a regular listener knows, I alternate with Dr. Scott every other week. We split the duties behind the microphone. And my turn 2 weeks ago was taken by Dr. Ori because I was away on some vacation for some needed R&R. Thank you, Dr. Ori. I hope that everybody enjoyed what he talked to you about and brought to everybody. I'm going to start the show today by talking a little bit about our recent meeting in Orlando that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation put on. The meeting was directed for direct primary care doctors or direct care doctors. It didn't even need to be primary care doctors. I met doctors there who were in GYN. I met a rheumatologist. There were people who were in specialty care who no longer accept insurance and have subscription models to deliver care, having patients pay a small monthly stipend to them and getting all the care that they are able to provide in their specialty. but it's mostly primary care. I advertised, I popularized, I pushed this meeting for months in advance, trying to encourage people to come to this meeting because I knew that it would be transformative and it would really help them with their practice, or it would make their existing practice better, or it would give them the tools they needed to be able to launch a direct care practice. And that's exactly what happened. It was a grand slam, this meeting. It was our largest meeting since COVID. This was our sixth annual meeting. It would have been our eighth meeting had we not needed to postpone two meetings because of COVID. But this meeting was better than any of the ones in the past for a number of reasons. Firstly, we had great attendance there. We had over 225 registered attendees, not to mention all of the faculty that was there at the meeting, but 225 attendees. The enthusiasm in the ballroom was just off the charts. The people there were enthusiastic, and they were hungry to hear the stories that the people who went down this road previously had to share with them, to give them a roadmap, to give them the encouragement they needed so that they could go ahead and launch a direct primary care or direct care practice. Some of the things that came out of this meeting were that not all direct care practices are created equal. The saying was that we heard over and over again by the people who had done this previously is that if you've seen one direct primary care practice, then you have seen one direct primary care practice, because no two are completely alike. But the principles of subscription model care is the same. Again, very different than concierge medicine, where people with insurance pay an additional fee, sometimes as high as $5,000 annually, to get that special touch, that direct access, the gold card, if you will, to a doctor so that they can have easier access to them. This is not that at all. This is healthcare for the masses, for the people who can't afford healthcare, who need a doctor and can get one for less than the cost of their cable bill every month or their cell phone bill every month. So it's an incredible model. I have quoted a figure that about the number of direct primary care practices, and some of the people there told me that I was way off base. You know, when we started this back in 2008, and I'm talking about docs for patient care now, shortly after got introduced to Lee Gross, who's now the president of the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. And Lee is considered the godfather of direct primary care. There may have been maybe 10 practices in the country that had devoted their practice to direct primary care. Well, I was saying that there are now over 2,000 direct primary care practices in the U.S., but some of the people at this meeting said that it may be closer to 7,000. So this is an incredibly rapidly growing healthcare delivery model, and a lot of work is being done to try to make it easier for people to be able to get their care through direct primary care doctors. We had people who were at this meeting from all over the country, and I'm going to get back to that in the tail end of the show. There were people from the West Coast. There were people from the Northeast. We had the meeting in Orlando, Florida, and people came with their families so that they can make a vacation out of it and go to Disney and Universal either before or after. And everybody who was there had great things to say about this meeting. Not only was there great information that was shared by speakers or by panels, but there was also hands-on sessions for the primary care doctors by specialists to learn or improve their skills for tasks that they were needing to be able to do in their office to provide that care at the office setting that would be included in their monthly subscription. Things like skin biopsies or phlebotomy, which means drawing blood, basic skills in urology, putting a catheter in or looking in an ear for ENT. So there is just a tremendous amount of information that was given to the attendees, and I think that they got far more out of this meeting than pretty much any other meeting that they attend. And I have to say, I've gone to medical meetings now for over 40 years, and I've never seen a happier group of people at a meeting than when I go to the Nuts and Bolts Direct Primary Care meeting. We had a couple of great, great speakers there who came because they're friends of Docs for Patient Care and friends of ours in the healthcare policy world. Our keynote dinner speaker was Marty McCary, a friend who is an author, TV expert for healthcare issues, a paid contributor to the Wall Street Journal, but more importantly, a renowned world-famous pancreatic cancer doctor at Johns Hopkins University. And there's nobody who has written more important and informative books that people can read easily and open their eyes about regarding the dysfunction in healthcare than Marty's written. He's written two books already, Unaccountable and The Price We Pay, books that I highly commend to you. Marty's been on the show before to talk about his books. We will have him back on the show when his new book comes out in the next few weeks, which is entitled Blind Spots, which is about the dogma that we take for granted in healthcare. And I'll get to that in a second, because I think that's really important. And I want everybody to understand why he wrote this book and why it's important for you to read the book and understand what information he's trying to pass along to you. Another one of our key speakers at this meeting was Brian Blaze. Brian, I have a nice long relationship with from his days back at the Mercatus Institute at the George Mason University. They are the experts on certificate of need research and academic research on certificate of need and how restrictive it is and what a waste it is to have these laws in our country and how it's hurting people, how it's hurting the average American patient, unbeknownst to them. But Brian left the Mercatus Institute, went to Washington in the Trump administration, became a healthcare policy expert in the administration, helped to shape very important executive orders that President Trump signed, and which were very impactful in helping patients, all of which were overturned by President Biden within the first weeks of his presidency, again harming Americans and putting them back in the same position that they were when Obamacare was passed. But Brian, when he left Washington in the change of administration, started his own healthcare policy group called the Paragon Health Institute. And this was something that he is working on. I'll tell you a little bit more about what Brian had to say in a bit after I cover the information about Marty McCary's talk. So what was really interesting about Dr. McCary's presentation to everybody was that he kind of gave a talk that was the synthesis of all three of his books, Unaccountable, The Price We Pay, and his new book, Blind Spots. What he shared with us is that over 51% of the federal budget goes to healthcare spending. Now, we know that in healthcare, the insurance companies, well over 50% of healthcare comes from the government. But just stop and think for a minute that over 50% of all federal spending is in healthcare. Now, the obvious spend, the direct spend here, is Medicare and Medicaid. That's obvious. That's the low-hanging fruit in trying to pick apart where healthcare dollars go. So Medicare and Medicaid spending accounts for 23% of the federal budget. And if you really drill down, that 23% is greater than the GDP of the majority of the countries around the world. But nonetheless, it is what it is. 23% of our direct spend is accounted for by Medicare and Medicaid. But 28%, over 28%, is baked into the budget somewhere else in the spending pie chart of the federal budget. So where does that 28% come from? Well, Social Security. So much of Social Security is healthcare. A certain percentage of that is goes directly to healthcare spending. The defense budget. In the defense budget, the healthcare spending for the people who work in the Department of Defense, and there are hundreds of thousands of workers that fall under the Department of Defense, they all get healthcare dollars that is budgeted in the defense spending. Well, that's all healthcare dollars. Those dollars are part of the total healthcare spend in this country. The VA is another area of direct healthcare spending. private insurance for government workers. Again, all the people in the GAO, all the people who work in the federal government get health care. That spend is baked into the overall budget for that part of the national spending. So on that pie chart of where dollars go in federal spending, in so many of those wedges on that pie chart, healthcare is a large part of it. Maybe not the 23% for Medicare and Medicaid, but 5 or 10%. Not to mention the fact that if you take all of that spending, it costs money to run this. We run at a deficit. We borrow money in order to be able to pay our bills and to provide all of those healthcare benefits throughout that pie chart. So there's interest on that. So another 2 to 3% of federal spending, the federal budget, that is directly tied to healthcare goes to paying the interest on providing those healthcare benefits. So this is why this healthcare is so important for everybody. And even if you think that you don't have to worry about this, that healthcare is really a very small part of what we're looking at, it's just the opposite. It is a behemoth. It is all-encompassing in our healthcare spend or in our federal spending. Now, he pointed out that the growth in healthcare spending is not because we're spending more money on doctors. Quite the opposite. The number of doctors throughout the last 30 years has gone up maybe 2 or 3%. So that's not it. We're not giving patients better benefits. They're not getting more bang for their buck than they did before. Quite the opposite. They're getting less for their dollars. But healthcare costs more, and so the insurance companies are making out great. Middlemen are making out great, but not the doctors and not the patients. And then he pointed out the most dramatic reason for the escalation in healthcare costs, and that was bureaucracy. Bureaucracy, bureaucrats, people who are in managerial positions in healthcare, has grown 3,000% over the last 30 years. And it is just astronomical, and it is parallel to the increase in healthcare spending. So what we have is a bloated healthcare system with increased federal spending that is unaccountable, and it is not getting better. It's getting worse, and there needs to be a major sea change to reverse the course. Otherwise, we are heading for a government-run healthcare program where they will be responsible for 100% of the healthcare spend instead of 50%, and it will increase our federal spending on healthcare, not decrease it. His new book sounds fascinating, and I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to have him come on the show to share some of the salient points from his book. Medical Dogma is what the book is about. It's entitled Blind Spots. What he is wanting people to understand is that we get information that is not necessarily solid scientific information, but yet important medical decisions are based on this misinformation. And I'm not talking about COVID. In fact, the COVID regime of vaccines and emergency shots and all that, that's unproven, and we don't know what that is going to tell us when we unpack this over the next 20 years. But let me just share with you some of the things that we have taken for granted as facts because they've been essentially cast in stone as truisms, but are really not, and they've become medical dogma. Opioids not being good and not addictive. We heard this for 35 years. This was medical dogma. You know, oh, you know what? Let's use opioids on a wide scale for people who have pain and not let them suffer. Well, we know what that's led to. Peanut allergies. You hear this all the time about avoiding peanuts because people have deathly serious allergies, anaphylactic allergies. Well, because of this dogma, which we've been hearing now for well over 20 years, that may actually be making the problem worse. And there's scientific information that's coming out now to support that position, that we have been doing more harm by perpetuating this myth to avoid peanuts, and maybe by avoiding them, it's making the number of children who have peanut allergies fly off the scale. And that's exactly what we're seeing. In Israel, they introduce peanuts to babies so that they won't have allergies. They desensitize them. And we're doing just the opposite here. Another one that we've heard, another myth, another dogma that we've heard for the last 50 years is separating moms and newborns after birth, you know, putting them in a special nursery and not letting the moms bond with the babies. Well, that's changed. It's reversed because we know how important it is for that direct contact between mother and baby right after birth. It's been shown scientifically that the baby's heart rate is lower when they are sitting on the mother's chest, and right after delivery, and the baby warms up faster going from an in utero environment to being on the mom rather than swaddled in a blanket. So we know that this is something that we have taken as fact, as dogma, for over 50 years, which has now been proven to be completely false. What about saturated fats? We heard about how you should avoid saturated fats to avoid heart disease. We've heard that for the last 54 years. Well, that's not true either. And there are numerous studies that have come out that are just the opposite, that LDL and HDL and cholesterol, those are things that have really very little bearing on heart disease, that there are other markers that are more important, and we shouldn't be avoiding saturated fats. It should be just the opposite. What about antibiotics? We've heard that antibiotics won't harm you. 75 years ago when penicillin, actually it's more than 75 years ago, it's more like 95 years ago when penicillin was first accidentally discovered by Dr. Fleming when some dust blew through a window on an agar plate and mold grew around it, and that mold became penicillin, and it revolutionized medicine. We've been told how great antibiotics were and that it would be so important for people to receive antibiotics to prevent getting sick, which early treatment for sickness without actually knowing what they're treating, just the ad hoc administration of antibiotics. Well, we know now what a disaster that is and how poor a decision that has become because of the rise now of antibiotic-resistant organisms. And now we're being told that we need to be judicious in our use of antibiotics and have good antibiotic stewardship. But that's not what we have been told for the better part of 75 years. One of the medical dogmas that Dr. McCary shared with all of us that just is mind-boggling, and we've heard this for well over the last 30 years, is that hormone replacement therapy after menopause causes breast cancer. So because of that statement, well, hundreds of thousands of women were denied hormone replacement therapy. And as a result, a good percentage of those women sustained osteoporosis or heart attacks because of they lacked the protective effect of estrogens on their arteries and their heart. And so when Dr. McCary's team looked at the studies or the landmark study that was responsible for this position and drilled down and looked at the data and then the conclusions, they discovered that there was no statistical correlation between hormone replacement therapy and breast cancer. And they were just amazed that so many women were denied the benefit of this treatment because of a paper that had a conclusion that was not statistically proven. When Dr. McCary hunted down the lead author in this paper, his response was that this was a trend. It was going in that direction. And Dr. McCary said, well, trends are not scientific data. That's not a correlation. You can make a trend with people who are drinking milk. In order to take a position like this, you need to have solid, statistically significant data to support those positions. And then the lead author finished with saying, well, that was my opinion, and I still stand by that. So this guy's opinion influenced policy by doctors, by the position of medical societies, by insurance companies covering it, all because it was his opinion. Again, medical dogma that is based on information that's not factual, but is either opinion or just popular belief. What's awaiting proper study is just what I said before. What's going on with this COVID regime? We have no idea what the vaccines have done to people. We'll find out. I guarantee we will find out. But we may not find out for a generation. We may not find out until we see problems with childbearing or the children that are produced by people who have been vaccinated, have issues. We may not know until we see a rise in chronic problems that were not necessarily problems before. What else is awaiting proper study is mammography. You know, whether or not we should be extending this to younger women because of the rise of breast cancer, instead of saying, well, we should wait until women are in their 50s to get mammography. That really does not seem to make any sense, but that's the position, and we will need more research about that. What about transgender and needing to do, quote, gender-affirming care or surgery on minors to prevent suicide? I don't think we really know what that real number is. In fact, the data that I have read supports just the opposite, that the people who have been gender converted, who have transitioned, have a higher rate of suicide than those who have not. So these are all very controversial positions. They're very difficult issues that we are being told how to behave or to look at, and we really don't have scientific data to support any of these positions. That's what Dr. McCary's book is about, and I look forward to having him on the show so that I can ask him more about it. Brian Blaze was at our meeting, and he is getting all set for a regime change in Washington in 2024, and God willing, that will be the case. In 2016, everybody was sort of flat-footed when President Trump was elected, and we really didn't know where to go in health care. Well, this time around, I think we have a roadmap for where we need to be to get things out of the gate early on. And Brian Blaze's Paragon Institute is gearing up to move in that direction. Patients are getting stuck with higher healthcare spending, and they're not receiving any value for this. And much of this is because of the Affordable Care Act, which is actually benefiting insurers. And this is what Mr. Blaze's recent Paragon newsletter was all about. Federal subsidies flow through the Affordable Care Act because of Medicaid expansion and because of the exchanges, and it accounts for $218 billion. About half of the healthcare spending and the majority of health insurer revenue now comes directly from the government, much like what I said in the pie chart that Dr. McCary shared with us. The design of the Affordable Care Act has led to inflationary premiums and spending, and the weighted average of the health insurer stocks are up 1,032% from 2010, and an astounding 448% just from 2013, the year before all of the key elements of the Affordable Care Act were implemented. Now, by comparison, the average growth of the Standard & Poor 500 exchange-traded funds was 251%. So healthcare insurer stock is about five times as great as the average for ETFs. And much of this is because of the Affordable Care Act. So the solution for this is to take people off the exchanges, and take them off the Medicaid rolls, give them opportunities to purchase insurance that is affordable, and to invest in health savings accounts and healthcare plans for employers, HRAs. Let people control the flow of their dollars. This does not happen in another 4 years of a Democrat run government in the White House, in the House of Representatives, in the Senate. If people wise up and give Republicans a mandate to fix things by voting for Republicans in all three of those places, the executive branch and both upper or the Senate and the House in Congress, then things will happen. And there's a glimmer of hope there. You've got Steve Garvey, who shockingly is ahead of Adam Schiff for senator in California. I can't recall when the last Republican senator in California was seated, but it was a while ago. In San Francisco, there people are fed up, and they're now talking about refunding the police. In Seattle, the people are fed up, and they're saying no to giving drugs and needles to addicts who are making their streets into open drug markets and looking like third world countries. In New York, the governor has brought the National Guard and state police into the subways because of rampant crime. People are fed up. They're hopefully waking up. And we're not talking now about right and left. We're talking about right and wrong. And it's time that people realized that and woke up. So let me tell you what else is wrong. The open border. So far, as of last week, there have been 60 cases that were reported of measles. And this is probably a gross underreporting. And I want to bring everybody back to the year 2000 when the CDC declared that measles was eliminated from the United States. People don't remember measles. I remember measles. I'm old enough to remember measles. I remember getting the measles. And it's not fun. It's a disease that is spread. It's a respiratory virus. Very, very, very contagious. Very harmful for pregnant women who, if they get infected, have babies that have severe handicaps, mental, it affects brain development. For people who are older, children and elderly and immunocompromised, it can cause severe pneumonia that can be life-threatening. And it could cause severe encephalopathy, a brain infection that can be lethal. 1 in 1,000 people, 1 in 1,000, that's a big freaking number. It gets encephalopathy from the measles. And 60% of the measles-related deaths are because of pneumonia. Now, where have the cases been reported? Arizona, California, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Washington. The number of cases that have been reported so far in 2024 have exceeded all of the reported cases in 2023. Just in Chicago alone, there were 15 reported cases. And as I said, this is a gross underreporting. The exposure of this, which is respiratory, has been probably in the millions. And this is a severe problem. And the reason is, again, depending on whether or not you are on the left or on the right is going to differ. If you're on the left, there, those people are pointing to the fact that the vaccination rates in this country have fallen dramatically, and that there is more foreign travel with people being exposed to measles in foreign lands. If you are on the right, and if you have half a brain, you realize that there may be between 10 and 15, maybe more, million illegal aliens from all over the world in whom we do no checking regarding their medical background, who are vectors for spreading measles. Back in the turn of the century and before, when people came to this country legally through Ellis Island, they had their healthcare history scrutinized by immigration officials. And if there was any question, they were quarantined. That doesn't happen here. How many people have crossed the border illegally and have been gotaways? Several million. How many people have crossed the border illegally and they're detained for just a few days and then let out by our government officials to all parts of the country? The majority. So we are looking at a resurgence in a communicable disease that was declared eliminated because we've opened up the floodgates. We have opened up our house and allowed it to become infected. And this is a major problem. There are falling vaccination rates. You know, people stop vaccinating their children because of craziness about autism and the link with childhood vaccinations and autism. And so now we know that the MMR vaccine, which is two vaccinations, the first is usually given between 12 and 15 months and the second between 4 and 6 years of age. Only 92% of U.S. children have gotten the MMR by age 2, which is far below the target of 95%. And why is that? Why are those numbers falling? And it's not entirely because of the concern about autism and the links of childhood vaccines to that problem. It's because of trust. Nobody trusts the federal government anymore, especially after this COVID regime. And so just imagine you've got a newborn baby who has not been vaccinated, and they're out and about, and they are exposed to measles by illegal aliens who are coming here, and they're going to get sick. And many of them are going to die. They're going to get very, very sick. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Measles is a marker for what is happening. There are other diseases out there that we are going to see a resurgence in. We're going to see tuberculosis. We're going to see, you know, other diseases that we've really cured. Smallpox. These are really grave concerns that everybody should be concerned about. And I'll leave it at that. We won't delve into more about illegal aliens right now. But I was thinking, after we went to this nuts and bolts meeting, about things that affect doctors that ultimately come back to harm patients. And there are basically four general areas that we need to be looking at. And I'm going to devote shows in the second and third quarter to these topics. One is physician wellness and burnout. You know, when doctors burn out or they retire, it hurts the entire healthcare system. And people don't realize that in order for them to stay healthy, they have to have a healthy medical population, a healthy group of doctors who are responsible for their health and well-being. And a lot of this has to do with administrative burden, but there is a real problem because doctors are not seeking the help that they need. And part of the reason is because of the requirement by certifying boards, licensure, state medical boards, specialty boards, hospitals, insurance companies. Every single one of those applications has a few questions, sometimes more than a few, that ask if you've ever been treated for any mental health problems. And they get into granular detail about this, and people are not going to be honest about whether or not they have sought out help because they don't want to have to share that information. And many of them won't seek out help just because they want to be truthful in these reporting to different agencies. And so consequently, they don't get the help that they need. This needs to change. It needs to change on a federal and state level. And we will be talking to people who are who think that this is important enough to address nationally. Certificate of need is another one which we've talked about, which we'll talk about again. Tort reform is malpractice insurance, malpractice cases. It's become worse after COVID, and the awards that are being given by juries that don't understand healthcare are just way out of control and just not really consistent with common sense. And so in order to fix a system and make it better for patients, you have to actually make the climate better for doctors. And that means making it – I'm not saying that you should not punish doctors who are bad doctors, but there are many, many good doctors who are being hurt by this out-of-control legal system. Doctors have to maintain their certification, and it's become – a cottage industry, which is burdensome. It takes doctors away from their responsibilities to take care of patients because they're spending way too much time preparing for this annual ritual of maintaining their certification, which is a racket, and the money goes to people at the top of our medical societies, which have become corrupt and woke and taken over, and this is a major problem that needs to be fixed. So again, patients are healthier because their doctors are healthier. So these are some of the things that we will be talking about in the upcoming months where we'll have shows. And before I wrap up the show, when I was at this meeting, I have to say that I'm always surprised when people come up to me and they say, "Oh, I've heard your voice. Your voice sounds so familiar because I've listened to your podcast. And it is something that I am always just so genuinely humbled by when people come and tell me about how they've enjoyed the show and they have listened for years and they've told their friends about it. And I'm not sure exactly how many downloads we have per month. I thought we were maybe at about 70,000, but you know, that number may be a little bit high. Nonetheless, we're pretty well listened to, but it can get better. And I think that you need to, help us grow the show. And by, helping us grow the show, what I would really like you to do, and nobody ever responds to this, but I really would be appreciative if you would be to go to Dr. Hal at americaswebradio.com. And if you could, share with me where you live, where you're coming from, that will give me an idea of our reach. And we, you know, really would, it would help us to do a better show. And it will help us to do a better meeting next year. We're now thinking about changing the venue to a different place. And so if you'll weigh in, that would be really helpful for me to get an idea of where we should do our next nuts and bolts meeting. We're thinking about doing it on the western part of the United States, and some of the leading candidates for the meeting are Salt Lake City, or Las Vegas, or Phoenix, or Denver. So weigh in and let me know what you think. We have some great upcoming speakers or guests on the show. We're going to have a few authors on the show in the next few months. Martha Boone, who is a retired urologist who's written 3 books, and her newest book is about her experiences at Grady, but it's done in fictional manner with the protagonist, the same one that was in her first book. Marty McCary will be on, and he will tell us about his new book, and we'll have some other guests who will talk about healthcare policy, like Brian Blaze and people who are involved in codifying physician wellness. So help me out, Dr. Hal at americaswebradio.com. And I appreciate you being here today. And let's all say a prayer for David Moxley for his rapid healthy return to the America's Web Radio studios. Thanks for being with us today.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.